Covering the crew all season long on WTMJ, it's Brewers Extra Innings. Now live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios in downtown Milwaukee at The Avenue, here is your host, Dominic Cotroneo.
Whew, man, that was a lot more stressful than I think anybody wanted it to be. The Brewers hang on and win this one in extras 7-5 over the Miami Marlins. Okay, that's a winning streak, as they once told me. Brewers get the victory. Trevor McGill, back-to-back saves for him. The bullpen definitely bent, but it did not break entirely. And Coleman Crowe is the story to start today. The big league debut that went well. Unfortunately, he gets a no decision. We'll break down his great outing today as well. And we're going to break it all down with Jerry Augustine. Welcome in. I'm Dom Cotroneo. Augie, I mean, the jitters and the emotion of a big league debut has so much happening, and it looked like Coleman Crowe was just making another run-of-the-mill Friday night start out there. No big deal whether he was in Double A, Triple A, or down in the NCAA. It does not matter. Coleman Crowe is ready to roll, and he really impressed me tonight.
Yeah, he was cool, calm, and collective out there. You know, here's a young man that is noted for having that great breaking ball. And you know what he did? He pitched with his best pitch, his breaking ball, when he needed it because he had great command of it. But I was really impressed the way he used all his pitches and really used the entire strike zone, was able to get the pitches where he wanted, make the pitches when he wanted to. But when he had to make that good pitch, he went to that breaking ball, and that breaking ball was really good tonight.
You know, we can measure it with everything under the sun about how good or bad a breaking ball is, right? We have every metric and number that you can put. But, like, look, just from the art of pitching, right, and just from the way that William brought him along, I tweeted this earlier tonight. I thought that both of those guys were so clearly on the same page. And furthermore, in my opinion, in my most recent memory, I thought this was one of the best games that William has called, especially bringing the catcher along and reading swings and being able to get the most out of Coleman Crowe's stuff. Because I'm sure the Marlins are looking up at that radar gun sometimes like, it's only 91? What? Why can't I get barrel on this? And the curveball was an equalizer. The cutter was great. He was locating well. What in particular jumped out to you, though, Augie, aside from the curveball, of course, but just – it looked like he was an artist out there being able to use the change of speed so well.
Well, I think, Dom, when you look at a guy like he pitched tonight, you've got to give so much credit to Contreras. And, you know, the more we talk about him every time he goes out there, he's mentioned just about every night. He's not just a catcher behind the plate that kind of thinks of what should be called. He's a professor behind the plate. He knows what to call. He knows what your strengths are. He knows how to use it. And I thought right after that first inning, he was dialed into Coleman, and I'll tell you what, they were on the same page. I thought he did a great job behind the plate calling the game. But the next thing was, when Coleman went out there, he looked relaxed. He looked like, you know, like they had a talk before the game, and he said, you see the pitch, be confident in what I call, locate it, and everything's going to be fine. He located. The one thing, he didn't miss his location too much. He got ahead. He made some great pitches. And like I said before, he used the curveball. But what was impressive to me was how he used the curveball when he needed it, but how he used his other pitches to make the curveball that much better. And I'll tell you, when you do that you're using your whole repertoire of pitching. You're pitching well. And I tell you what, he changed speeds and kept the hitters off stride when he needed to. It was just a great game, not only by Contreras, but I'll tell you, Coleman really pitched a game that was probably as good as you could have pitched your first time out.
Yeah, I look at this last trio of starters, right? And each one of them, we can see an adjustment in particular, right? We talked about Chad Patrick's cutter on Thursday night, how he changed the grip slightly on it, or I should say on Wednesday night, how he changed the grip slightly on it. He completely scrapped the changeup, and he got better results. Brandon Sproat yesterday relied on the cutter more than he ever has before. Also had some good sinkers in there, too. Completely scrapped the changeup. Coleman Crowe does not throw a changeup, embracing the cutter. 70% of his cutters were strikes. In fact, 11 out of 12 sinkers were strikes. I mean, the dude was all over the zone today. And you generally have to have one of two things, right, Augie? You either get elite swing and miss and you have stuff that just plays so nasty, or you're somebody that is always on the corners, always on the edges, and no matter what velocity you have. And I look at Chad Patrick the other day, like, not topping out higher at 95, but yet, nonetheless, he's able to get through this and do, you know, just sort of just mix things up the way that, you know, the old school game would do. Guys in your generation would have done. I don't mean that as an old joke, but I mean that as a compliment.
Well, you're playing the edges. You know, I think that's one thing, Dom, and I think you'll agree with me, all the young pitchers that they have. You know, you take Brandon Woodruff. I mean, this guy pitches to the edges. He knows when the add and subtract. He knows when you're going to go up in the zone, you're going to go in. He's going to force him, and he's just going to let it go. He's going to locate the ball down. But I think what's been so impressive with the young pitchers, and includes Chad Patrick and them all, is the way, their ability to play with the corners, the ability to stay on the side of the plate that they have to, locate the ball. And when they go up in the zone, they add a little velocity to it. They go there with a little bit of meaning to it. And that really makes a big difference. When you can throw that fastball up, add a little bit of fast velocity to it, and then go down in the zone and have that ball sink or cut the corners and play on the outside edges, you're going to be really successful. But they all have a pitch that they use to success. You talked about Chad Patrick with the slider. Tonight, it was Coleman Crowell. Great breaking ball. And he pitched with it, and they knew he had that great breaking ball, and made his other pitches just that much better.
You know, when I look at what makes the Brewers such a factory for pitching development and believing in guys that maybe other people don't believe in, and let's also address the elephant in the room here, Coleman Crowe's getting optioned tomorrow. I mean, it's just the reality of baseball, and with this bullpen that is so battered and bruised right now, and we'll talk about them in a moment, but the thing that I love about Coleman Crowe and the story that his story is, right? He gets traded twice in his career, once from the Angels to the Mets, and then from the Mets to the Brewers. He has Tommy John surgery. He doesn't pitch for 2 years, and the Brewers stayed with him that whole way. They add him to the 40-man roster. They believe in him. They knew that he was going to be pitching the big leagues at some point this year. And this project that's happened since December of 2023 culminated today when the Brewers traded a guy in Adrian Houser, who they were likely going to non-tender anyway, and Tyrone Taylor, who's still on the Mets, but the Brewers had so many outfielders coming up, making room for Sal Frelick and Jackson Churio and Garrett Mitchell, that it made sense for them to trade Tyrone Taylor. And it pays off today, Coleman Crowe helping them get a victory today.
Yeah, it sure does. You know, and that's a real credit to the organization from Matt Arnold all the way down, looking at pitchers and seeing what they have here. I'm sure when they saw Coleman throw the ball, they said, oh, a special pitch is a curveball. You know, it's a good pitch. That's his number one pitch. And it's a pitch that if he can command, we can make it better. And what the Brewers do is they take a pitch that you have and they make it the best they can be. But what they don't stop at is they take your secondary pitches and use those pitches effectively to make your best pitch better. And I think that's what's a real credit to this organization. I think when you talk about Chris Hook and Henderson, what they do, they've studied each pitcher. They know what they do. They know what their best pitch is. And they take that best pitch, they make it as best they can. But you can make your best pitch better by making your secondary pitches better. And I think that's what they do. The confidence they have in these guys to make that pitch, take those pitches and make them better, making that primary pitch better, and using the secondaries is so effective. And we see that in all the starts. We saw it yesterday in Sprout. He was really good using that breaking ball. And I'll tell you, very aggressive yesterday in the strike zone with his fastball. And we saw the same thing with Chad Patrick the night before. In the strike zone with the good pitches, but that main pitch they command very well.
I think the other thing that we do have to address tonight, and maybe this is a discussion as well throughout the weekend as we monitor what happens, I understand both sides of the argument. 77 pitches, your bullpen is weak, you know, you're into the sixth inning, let him keep going, see what he can do. And the other side of that argument is, hey, he's a rookie, he just gave up a double, more hard contact is coming now. This is where the offensive question comes in, that's going to be for the next segment. But I think right now, the Brewers now with Woodruff tomorrow and Miz on Sunday, they are looking at both of those guys saying, let it eat, let it go, because we need as much length from you as possible. This is not to the fault of Coleman Crowe. This is what the Brewers have been doing this last week, pulling guys a little earlier than you expect, and now the bullpen is starting to wear that burden on their shoulders right now. At the same time, you give him a happy moment, you give him a good, positive outcome to finish his big league debut, but now you're going to deal with the consequence these next 48 hours until this off day, saying you're not going to have Abner Uribe, you're not going to have Angel Serpa, you're probably not going to have Trevor McGill either. So something's got to give. You got to get some length the rest of this weekend.
Yeah, there's no question about it, but I think you put it right when you get to you talk about Kroll and the pitching is get him out on a positive note. I think the one thing you see that this organization does, they'll bring guys up, and you can see with all the young pitchers that they've had up here in the past, to bring them up, but get them to where they have some success. Because what Coleman, like you said, he'll probably go back to AAA tomorrow. When he goes back to AAA, he's going to go back with a positive note saying, yes, I pitched with my curveball. My secondary stuff worked great tonight. I'm going to build on that. I'm going to be better because of that. And these kids go down with that positive attitude that's saying, hey, you know what? Next time I come up there, I'm going to be better than I was last time. And I don't know if you can pitch any better than you did tonight. But then you also have a situation here where you get him out of there with some success, which he had. He had great success tonight. But then you get Hall back in that game, DL Hall in the game, with that situation coming in after the starter, getting that one or two outs. I think they're testing DL here, say, hey, can you be that guy that can come in, get those key outs for us, and then we'll turn it over to another person in the bullpen. I think that's really important. I think this is a good test for DL Hall, and it's going to be fun to watch and see what he does.
I think the Brewers do have a conversation to be had with the bullpen, but before you have the conversation with the bullpen, we got to have the conversation about the offense. They still scored 7 runs today. There's enough to be positive about, but there's also plenty to pick through as well. 855-616-1620 is the phone number. 855-616-1620. Brewers win 7-5 in 10 innings on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ. We got through the rain. Hope everyone is okay after these latest round of storms. Thanks for staying with us here tonight on WTMJ. I'm Dom Catronio with Jerry Augustine. A couple of texts that have rolled in. Mitch from Kenosha. So awesome to see Garrett Mitchell healthy and showing the X-factor potential he has. Hoping for a full season of G. Mitch. From Alex in Oshkosh. Solid debut from Coleman Crow. Garrett Mitchell came up clutch in extras. And better yet, McGill actually closed the door. Can't get cocky, though. Need a little bit better if he wants the closer spot back. Hey, I thought he did a pretty nice job tonight. And nonetheless, it's a series opener dub. So let's kind of pair this. Let's start with Garrett Mitchell. And Garrett, very quietly this season, it's a bit of an enigma stat line here, Jerry. Because I tell you, hey, he's hitting .289. He's got a .439 on base. He's got a .444 slug. An OPS that's near .900, right? Everyone's super excited about that, right? There's no reason to be down about a player like that and think that, oh, that's not that great. But then, 23 strikeouts. 23 strikeouts in 58 plate appearances. He is an enigma, right? 40-plus percent of the time he's striking out, but the other 60% of the time, he's generally doing damage. And let's let this guy continue to get more plate appearances underneath his belt. If he's a guy that's going to have a 35% strikeout rate by season's end, but have an 800-plus OPS, I think every single Brewer fan would sign up for that.
I agree with you. I agree with you. I think we talked the other night of, you know, you take a guy like that, it strikes out a lot. Where do you put him in the order? And you came up with putting him in that 7th spot in the order, which is a good spot for him. But, yeah, he does strike out a lot. He does swing at some pitches or take some pitches in some of the counts that gets him in the hole, and then he tries to make the adjustment, and he can. But, you know, you see all the good things he does tonight, you know. Tonight, you look what he did tonight, 2-for-4 with 3 RBIs on base 3 times. That's what you want your guy in the 7th spot to do. And he can do so much because he could, number one, he's part of that Brewer speed part. And they gets on base, they can cause a lot of trouble. So the strikeouts, I think, will get better as he gets more at-bats, when he gets a little bit more patient at the plate. But I'm telling you what, his at-bats and what he's doing, I really like that. Last time up, taking that ball the opposite way, what a nice swing on it, the driving the 2 runs that he drove in. So I just think him in that spot in the 7th order is a good spot for him right now. He does strike out on occasion, but I'm going to tell you, he's also done a really good job with that lower part of the batting order.
You know, I think that the tools for Garrett Mitchell are so loud. And you look at the way that the Brewers have their outfield depth chart right now set up when Jackson Churio comes back, that they got to keep Jake Bauer's bat in the lineup somehow. Jake might be getting more time in left field. Churio, I mean, Sal's off to an ice-cold start. You hope that gets fixed sooner as opposed to later. But then you put Churio in right field or Bauer's in right field, whatever they end up doing. But Garrett is taking the center field and running with it. Granted, he's still not playing much against lefties. They're not seeing a lefty over the weekend in the starting rotation. But I look at this team, and you're starting to see, okay, he's now played 17 games this season. He only played 25 all of last year. He only played 69 between injuries in 2024, right? I mean, if he can get to half of a season, that's a minor win for Garrett, and that's when I really want to sit down and assess what kind of a player the Brewers have on their hands, because he's in his age 27 season. He's showing the talent and the tools that made him a first-rounder in the first place, and he's finally staying on the field at least for the first 3 weeks of this year.
You know, health is such a huge thing with baseball players today, and back when I played even. And if we go back and talk about the group that I was in 80 from when Paul Molitor came over there, Paul Molitor's first couple of years, he came up with a lot of little nooks and crannies where he'd be out of lineup. I remember one time they put him in center field, and he turned his ankle. He was out for several weeks. But all of a sudden, he fought through it, and he got into about that third or fourth year in the big leagues. And all of a sudden, it just started off, and he just took off and became a Hall of Famer. I look at Garrett Mitchell as getting that opportunity of being healthy all year, and I agree with you. How do you assess him because you haven't had that opportunity because he comes up with these little freak injuries? It'll be interesting to see him stay healthy all year and what happens. Even with the strikeouts, I think will change quite a bit. Having him adapt, have him get a lot of at-bats in a year, he's a 5-tool player. He can hit with power. He can hit throw. He can hit with for average. I think he's the kind of guy that could really prove to be very good. But like you said, Dom, you got to get some time in the big leagues. You got to get that consistent time in the big leagues, and be really nice for him to be healthy all year. I think we could really find out a lot about Garrett Mitchell.
Some other guys down the box score here. Jake Bowers, 3 hits, including one in the 10th inning. 3 runs scored for him. Great base running on a Luis Renjifo double, who, by the way, reached base 3 times today, going 2 for 4. Then you also look at William Contreras, 1 for 5 with a double for him, but no strikeouts once again for his contest. Overall, the Brewers offense left a lot out there. They went 3 for 14 with runners in scoring position. Two of those were by Garrett, one of them the double in the 10th, the other the infield single with the bases loaded in the 4th, and the 3rd hit was Jake Bowers hitting a single to left field that didn't score a run. So 11 at-bats that came up empty. They left 10 runners on base with runners in scoring position today. It's just not a number that you're necessarily happy with. I know they scored 7 runs, and I don't want to complain about a win, but I think everybody that's watching this offense right now is understanding the two things are connected. Maybe the starters get a longer leash if the offense is firing on all cylinders, and maybe you can finally give the bullpen a breather if the offense is firing on all cylinders. I mean, how many times, Augie, have we been seeing Jake Woodford warming up in the bullpen in case the game gets out of hand, and then all of a sudden, all right, no, it's going to be Uribe. Oh, no, it's going to be McGill. Or no, it's going to be Serpa. And those guys have got to be already hanging here in April. The offense is just as much to the blame as far as the bullpen struggles to this point in the year.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. You know, you look at this offense, and of course, you know, when you got Cheerio and Vaughn and Yelly on the sidelines, that's such a big part of your offense. But you know, you're right. I looked at the box score tonight, and I looked at the top 4 guys. I think they were 2 for 17 or 2 for 15. But then I looked at that Terang scored a run, Sanchez scored a run. Sanchez was on base for 3 walks, and that all pays off. They're not getting the position where they're scoring a lot of runs right now. They're not putting the ball in play with runners in scoring position as much as they have. But you know what? When they needed, they did put the ball in play, and they made the Miami Marlins make some tough plays. And I think that was the biggest difference in the ball game.
I look at this offense, and I know some folks like to pile on. And Renjifo had an 0-for-20 that he finally snapped out of today. But you can see, he's hitting the ball hard. There's a lot of underlying stuff that you can like with Renjifo right now. He's going to be just fine. But right now, it's a reminder, and I mean this with all due respect. You know, Greg Jones and David Hamilton weren't supposed to be playing this much, right? This was never in the cards for the Brewers to have all 3 of Vaughn, Churio, and Yelich down at the same time. Okay, so there are reinforcements coming. Them going 0-for-10 certainly isn't helping the cause, but it's a reminder that there's a reason they're hitting 8th and 9th is because they are supposed to get the fewest plate appearances in a game. Now, it doesn't help that Sal is hitting .177 right now. But a reminder, we can use that calendar excuse, I would say, till what, Memorial Day? It's not early anymore once you get to Memorial Day, right?
Yeah, I agree with you. I just think they put in that bottom order. But they do good things. I tell you, you look at at what they can do, their speed of they use their speed and they put the ball in play, and that's the most important part. Give at least when if you're getting games, it's not like we have it the way we want it right now. But I'm gonna tell you what, use it to your benefit, and that's do what you do. And you know, you look at what these guys have done and the way they've played and how hard they've played. You know, they're needed right now. They're needed to come in. Would we want more out of them? Sure, we'd love for them to be swinging the bat real well. But everybody has their chore to do in the ball game. And I tell you what, I think these guys are stepping up. You look at what Hamilton has done with his speed. He's been big with this. He's got against Toronto. He was huge with the bunts he made and what he's done putting the ball in play. And he's played great defense. So there are reinforcements coming. It's just we need some time to get healthy. Once we get healthy, this will be a much better offensive ball club.
I believe that entirely. In fact, Jackson Churio started swinging a bat today. He's traveling with the team right now. Rehab assignment coming soon, which is very good news for the crew. Let's talk about the differences between a team that's been competing and a team that wants to be competing. We'll explain what I mean by that coming up on the other side of the break here on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ. Let's do a little buy or sell here. Buy or selling is brought to you by Tony Wendorf and Associates. If you're looking to buy or sell a home, trust Tony Wendorf & Associates, one of the top real estate teams in Wisconsin. And powered by Keller Williams, they bring faith, family, and a red carpet experience to every home deal. Step up to the plate with a winning team behind you, wendorfteam.kw.com. I'm Dominic Catronio with Jerry Augustine. You know, let me start with the buys, with something that may surprise you here, Augie. I'm buying stock in the Marlins, and I think they're not that far off. Now, they shot themselves in the foot a lot in today's game. We'll get to that in a moment. But I see a young, talented core forming. They do have some injuries right now. They have, obviously, some great pitching, and we'll see it this weekend in Sandy Alcantara and Yuri Perez. But I still see a team that is making the little young mistakes that the Brewers, a team that has obviously been winning, taking advantage of. But the Marlins are not that far off. They are 9-11, but they are a better team, I think. I think they can flirt with 500, even be better than 500 by year's end.
I agree with you. I think this is a good young ball club. You know, you look at, I think when you look at teams, Dom, I think you look at two things. I think you look at confidence in what you're doing and understanding the play that's on hand. We looked at, there's two plays, especially tonight, when you got the E2 in the fourth inning that helped us score a run, and then the Edwards error in the last inning. These are cases where, you know, where you get a little bit too rushed. You have confidence that you can make the play, but then you get too rushed. And I think when you play, teams get better, and as they get along in their season, they become a better team. They have patience in the field, and sometimes you just have to have patience and with your defense that you're not rushing. You know what the play is. You make the play. I thought the throw by the catcher in the fourth inning, well, he just rushed, and I thought Edwards. Edwards had an opportunity to come up and turn his body and make a good firm throw to home plate. What did he do? He caught the ball and tried to throw from the side, and the ball went off errantly. And I think when you get those teams that are that close, they get that patience. They understand that, you know, that confidence of saying, I can make that play, but I have to do the correct things in order to make that play. And I think that's where the Marlins are right now. They're a good young ball club. They're good on the offensive side. They have good pitching. They have good defense. It's just that sometimes you get it too aggressive and you try to be too quick, and that causes a lot of little errors and a lot of little miscues that you just talked about.
I mean, not only that, right? They get picked off twice at first base in this game.
That's right.
They have a pitch timer walk in the 10th inning. They struggled with challenges. Now, granted, so did William Contreras, but he still got one right. The Marlins went 0-2 on their challenges. They have allowed the most stolen bases in the league as a staff. So it's just a lot of little things that are holding them back that are certainly correctable, and they have a great staff to do so. But that's just one thing I wanted to point out here on little mistakes that you can see the difference between a winning team and a team that's still on the way up. Now, on the selling portion of this, the stat that blew my mind today is that Angel Zerpa threw 33 pitches today in a very stressful eighth inning, and the only swing and miss he got was the last batter he faced in Austin Slater to strike him out to end the inning. Look, I like Angel Zerpa. I love the deal when they made it. He's still got to go back to the drawing board. to develop something that can get consistent swing and miss. I think that was number one on the project list for the Brewers. I mean, they knew this when he was arriving, right? He only had a 2% or second percentile whiff rate in all of baseball last season. And he's right back to it this season at 19th percentile, which is certainly better, but he's throwing a lot of strikes. The slider has tightened up. It's really behaving not quite like a full nasty slider. So I'm selling whatever they're working on with Zerpa, because he might need to get back to the drawing board. Because when you're in leverage and when you're at the end of the game, the only thing that really matters is, can you miss bats? I know he can get ground balls, and I think that's a great trait to have. But you know it, Augie, in those stressful situations, sometimes you just don't even want contact, and that's the best way to do it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think I like your stuff. You know, he's the kind that comes in, he gives you a little bit different look. He gives you that low three quarters, throws a ball. It just seems like sometimes he overthrows a little bit. And I agree with you. He's got to have some kind of either an off-speed pitch or be a lot more consistent with that slider that he does have. It just seems that anytime he goes to facing the plate to the right side of the plate, it's always a big sweeping type slider. Learning to cut that down a little bit. Sometimes what they do is they move guys on mounds, make the angle to the strike zone might be a little bit different. It's interesting. He's a real interesting guy because I like the angle which he pitches. That arm angle is tough to pick up for hitters, but to have something to go along with the fastball that he does have, whether you sink it or you cut it, no matter what he does, I think that breaking ball is very important. But like you said, it needs to be cut down where he can throw it more consistently for strike. When he can do that, I think he'll get swings and misses with his fastball up and down. But he's got to be a little bit more consistent with his breaking ball.
You're looking at this bullpen now for the Brewers. They just optioned Easton McGee today to make room for Coleman Crowe. And you can't recall Easton McGee immediately because of the way the rules work. He has to spend at least 2 weeks in the minors. And the only reason he would come back up is to replace an injury. So tomorrow, the Brewers would have to recall somebody else or activate a Craig Yoho off the injured list if he's healthy enough to return to the big league roster. He had a calf strain at the end of spring training. I'm double-checking if he's actually pitched in a game yet down in AAA Nashville this season. He has not yet, so he is still working his way back. I mean, the Brewers are in a tough spot tomorrow of what they're going to do with this bullpen, because there's no way they're going to Uribe for the rest of this series. There's no way they're going to McGill tomorrow, because that would be three in a row. Probably not go to him on Sunday either. So they're up against it this weekend of trying to figure out what they have available.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think what they're looking at, they're hoping that when you get the guys that are going out in the next 2 days, when you got Woody and Miz out there, that they can have some length. I think it would be really important that you do have Ashby out there. I think you can utilize. You have Olford out there that you can probably go to, but it's going to be interesting. I think D-Hall could probably come back out there. It's going to be interesting to see what they do the next 2 days. But like you said earlier, by going and getting Crow like you did tonight, not letting him go a little bit deeper, I'm telling you, they're anticipating hopefully that both Brandon Woodruff and the Miz can go out there and give you some length.
Jerry Augustine, appreciate you as always. Stay dry, and hopefully everything's all good in your neighborhood, because I see a lot of puddles in mine.
I got a new lake in my backyard, so it's most water I've ever seen in my backyard. So we've gotten a lot of rain. Hopefully it'll stop. But I'll tell you, the Brewers are on a winning streak. Let's keep that up, and tomorrow let's have Woody have a good ball game. Go deep in the ball game.
Looking forward to it. Thank you, Augie.
All right, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right, let's dive a little bit deeper into the box score, give you some headlines around the league as well. We continue on to the top of the hour right here on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ. Do a quick who's hot, who's not, highlights and Murph still to come. I'm Dom Petronio, 855-616-1620. If you're staying up late with us, 855-616-1620 over on the YouTube live chat as well. Mitchell with David Hamilton, Joey Ortiz struggling offensively, Sal too. It is so good to see Renjifo deliver a couple of hits. I think Renjifo will start to be more consistent and claim the majority of third base at-bats. I agree with that statement. And we'll always be keeping an eye down in AAA of what's going on with the Nashville Sounds. They had a doubleheader today against Worcester, the Woo Sox, as game one went to the Sounds, if I'm not mistaken. Yes, they won both games by a final of 4-2, actually, earlier today. Jet Williams scored a run, had a walk, nothing crazy. Jefferson Caro went 2-for-4. No one's really tearing the cover off the ball right now. Down in AAA, Brock Wilkin went 3-for-3 in game one. But as things warm up, we'll see if the offensive performance improves down there for the Nashville Sounds. Furthermore, for the Brewers on who's hot is what we're talking about here. Jake Bowers is just so quietly being such an important player for the Crew, virtually playing every day right now. Now, he's still got 5 homers and only 1 double, which I find funny. But he's somebody that has an .858 OPS and 66 plate appearances, a slugging still over .500. He's played great defense at first base. He's been somebody that also base runs great. I think I've mentioned this on the show before, but that Murph praises that if Yelly, you know, Yelly's his best base runner in the way that he cuts the bags, and you combine that with his speed and the way that he's able to get the most out of his stride, he always mentions Jake Bowers in those sentences too. And him scoring from first on that double by Renjifo, I think that was a perfect example of how to do it. Was thinking of scoring as soon as the ball was hit. He got to see the ball in front of him, trusted his third base coach, had a tight turnaround third. Textbook stuff from Jake Bowers in his age 30 season. Now, a quick lap around the league here for some who's cold, and this who's hot, who's cold, is brought to you by our friends at Sider Heating, Plumbing, and Electrical. Spring is here for Wisconsin, and for a limited time, Sider Heating, Plumbing, and Electrical will get a free AC system with the purchase of a new gas furnace through Sider. So stay comfortable year-round, but hurry, spots are limited. Call today or visit Sider.com, Sider.com. This deal runs through the end of the month. Now, when I look around the league, it looks like the Angels are going to snap the Padres' winning streak. The Angels are up 8-0 right now. The Padres are on a W8 right now. But heavy hearts today in Anaheim for Angels Hall of Famer Garrett Anderson. Man, he had a smooth swing. World Series champ in 2002, was nearly an Angel for life, passing away today. So our thoughts to his friends and family and the fans in Southern California that loved that left-handed swing from Garrett Anderson. It was smooth. It was under control. He was a home run derby champ. He was an All-Star Game MVP. He was a heck of a player. So gone too young, and wish them nothing but the best. But the Angels very quietly, guys. Have you noticed that Mike Trout is on fire? That Mike Trout, like, yes, that Mike Trout is back. They're 10-10. The West is weird right now because the Mariners are ice cold. The Mariners are down 2-0 at home right now to the Rangers. But have you noticed Mike Trout? He had a great series over the weekend at Yankee Stadium. Trout this season, he's hitting .239, but that's not the whole story. 7 homers. He's got 20 walks and 19 strikeouts, nearly equal. So that's a .419 on pace for an OPS that's nearly 1,000. Mike Trout, man, I was, again, having a conversation with Murph, I think last spring training, that we joked that his sons, Austin and Jackson, they're at this age where they haven't seen prime Mike Trout. They haven't seen the guy that was accruing 70 war in his first 7 seasons, and his baseball reference page is full of black and bold ink because, 6 straight top 2 finishes in MVP. I'm pulling up his baseball reference right now because this should be printed on a t-shirt as a reminder of how good it was through his age 27 season. So when you start with 2012, his first full season in the show, through the 2019 season, so that's a total of, 8 seasons, right? Yeah, 8 full seasons. There's a couple of injuries there at the end of it. But for 8 seasons, he had a .308 average and an OPS over 1,000 and a .280 home run total. He is as sure a first ballot Hall of Famer as you can find. He's the active leader in triples right now. He's a .293 career hitter. And looking at it, here's how his list of MVPs go. MVP 2 in 2012, lost to Mickey Cabrera, winning the Triple Crown. 2013, or that was 2013, I should say. So back-to-back runner-up finishes in MVP when Mickey went back-to-back in 12 and 13. Then he wins MVP in 2014, runner-up in 2015, MVP in 2016, fourth, oh gosh, what a slouch, in 2017, second in 2018, MVP in 2019, and even fifth in the shortened 2020 season. God mode. And it's good to have Mike Trout back in our lives playing as well as he is. So that's a quick little who's hot, who's cold. On the cold front, though, real quick, looking around the National League, man, the Mets, they can't catch a break right now. They get beat up by the Cubs today, 12-4. This game was wacky. Kadai Senga got beat up again, too. The Mets have the worst record in the National League. Yep, I will say it again. The Mets have the worst record in the National League, 7-13. It's not going to last forever. It's April 17th, but they've lost 9 games in a row. Yikes. Let's get back to our game, shall we? Highlights, they're coming up next here on 620 WTMJ. Brewers win, 10 innings, 7-5. The roof was open in Miami, and it played even bigger than it normally does. Doesn't matter, the Brewers can win without homers like they did tonight. Let's get you the highlight recap.
Ready for this?
Out of here!
This?
Brought it back! Ho-ho-ho!
And this?
It is gone!
Time for tonight's highlights.
Coleman Crowe making his big league debut, acquired back in the offseason before 2024. Finally here and healthy, back in the show. He had a 1-2-3 first with a little bit of a scare after tumbling around first base with an awkward step. He was fine. He stayed in the game. And in the second inning, he got to keep a baseball.
1-2 pitch. Swing and a miss and a curveball. And Coleman Crowe with his first big league strikeout. He dropped the hammer on Otto Lopez. That's number one in hopefully what will be a long career for Coleman Crowe.
Great stuff from him, Jeff Levering on the call. Then he was reminded that he's pitching in front of a big league defense, and Bryce Terang has got platinum on his glove.
2 is a ground ball right side, gloved on the forehand by Terang. Spins and throws from shallow right, takes care of Sanoha. A gold glove level play from the platinum glove player in Bryce Terang.
But it's still a nothing-nothing game as we head to the top of the fourth inning. With one out, a walk to Gary Sanchez got the rally going. A single to right by Jake Bowers had runners on first and second. Then Renjifo gets hit by a pitch to load the bases for Garrett Mitchell.
Junk from the first base side of the rubber out of the stretch. The pitch, and Mitchell, a chopper on the right side. This is going to be trouble. Fielded by Edwards. The throw to first is not in time. Everybody's safe. Sanchez scores from third. A little indecision between Junk and Edwards. Edwards eventually took charge, fielded, but Mitchell's speed able to leg it out. It's 1-0 Milwaukee.
Then with the infield in for Greg Jones, a ground ball hit with the bases loaded to short, and a poor decision there by Otto Lopez to try to take it to the back himself and throw to first. It was not nearly in time to get Greg Jones. Another run score, so that made it 2-0 Brewers. And then the mistakes started to add up for the Marlins on a poor attempt at trying to pick off a run.
Junk brings home the pitch. There goes Jones. The throw back to third is going to go into left field. Here comes Renjifo down the line to score. Sprinting to third is Jones. And the Brewers have stolen another run. It's 3-0 Milwaukee.
So they would get three in the most Brewers way possible in the top half of the inning. The Marlins would finally respond with a sac fly in the bottom of the fourth inning, but Crowe was still rolling. He had a 1-2-3 fifth, then his offense gave him some more support in the sixth.
Pitch to Renjifo, hit into the gap in left center field. That's going to go all the way to the wall. Bowers on his horse. He will try and score all the way from first. There will be no relay throw as Luis Renjifo plugs the gap in left center and makes it 4-1 Brewers.
Renjifo having on base three times tonight, he needed that, busting out of his 0-for-20. However, that would be all the Brewers get in the top half of that inning. And once again, the Marlins would respond in the bottom half. A leadoff double by Xavier Edwards. Crowe would only get one more batter. Then he was pulled after getting Ramirez to fly out. But Otto Lopez would go yard off of DL Hall to make this a one-run game, 4-3. The Brewers would leave the bases loaded in the seventh, a key opportunity they could not score on. And in the eighth, things got stressful. Angel Serpa on the mound, a one-out walk to Edwards. Augustin Ramirez lined a double in the left center field that allowed the run to score, but 33 pitches later, Serpa was able to get out of the eighth with the game still tied. And in the ninth, no drama there. Neither team would score, so we go to extra innings. Place runner, Bryce Terang. First batter, a pitch timer walk of all things. A single to left by Jake Bowers would load the bases, and then some good fortune would start to come the Brewers' way.
Infield is in for the Marlins. First pitch from Fauché is a ground ball right side, fielded by Edwards. Is going to come home for one, and the throw gets past Ramirez and then hits off of the home plate umpire Thomas. The Brewers take the lead. Terang dashes home from third. That was an easy play. Edwards' throw was a little bit wide, and Ramirez didn't catch it.
Neither one caught it. It was a poor play all around, and if it didn't hit Derek Thomas, it would have scored two runs. No matter. That run still scored right after it, thanks to Garrett.
1-0. Mitchell, a fly ball down the left field line. This is going to get down. It's going to roll into the corner. Brewers are going to run for days. Two runs are in, holding Renpifo at third. It's a two-run double for Mitchell, and the Brewers have broken it open here in the 10th inning. It is 7-4.
On a night that they used D.L. Hall and Abner Uribe and Angel Serpa and Grant Anderson, it was Trevor Miguel on for the save.
And the 2-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. He struck him out. Went back to the curveball, and he strikes out Otto Lopez, and the Brewers win in 10 innings tonight by a final score of 7-5.
How about it? The Brewers make it a winning streak, 7-5 on 9 hits, no errors. The Marlins had 5 runs, 8 hits, 2 errors. The Brewers left 10 on base, the Marlins 7. The winner is Abner Uribe, his first of the year. The loser is Colin Fauché. And it took every minute of 3 hours and 19 minutes, and 11,103 were on hand on a Friday night at Lone Depot Park. We'll hear from the manager up next on 620 WTMJ. It's 3 in a row for the Crew. Are there going to be a new version of Team Streak? You know, maybe last year, we never came up with a proper nickname for last year's team with 3 long winning streaks. Can't truly be Team Streak because they didn't have a ton of losing streaks like 87 did. Nonetheless, we'll have to get to the drawing board on that. The manager, Pat Murphy, 201 victories as the Brewers skipper, spoke to the media after the win.
And we feel them when we play them. And, they got a good ball club, and they've done a great job over there making this last couple of years really, really good. And they're tough to beat here. And I thought Coleman went out and just, he was tremendous in his first outing. He didn't miss too many spots.
What do you want him to take away of just how his stuff played?
I want him to understand he can pitch here. I mean, he can pitch in the big leagues. And, you come to this environment against that lineup as good as they're playing, it's pretty good.
You see guys in the debut sometimes, it's some spraying, some command issues.
Right.
He attacked the zone. What did you learn about him and the way he can pitch?
Poise. Poise, and he's not afraid to throw to the edges. He's not afraid. Counts don't really matter to him. He just makes pitches,
The way things are going with your starting pitching, hold your breath a little bit there on that first play that he makes over at first base.
Jesus, Mary, Joseph. I'm Catholic, so I can say Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. You know what I mean?
I would say PFPs, but it's the first baseman that are chucking it.
Yeah, I mean, the cardinal rule for the first baseman with that left-handed hitter is make sure that make sure you know where the second baseman is so you know how much ground you get to cover, and kind of was lackadaisical play, I felt like, to a normally pretty alert guy, and he responded pretty well. He responded that lack of defense or lack of sharpness on that play. It led to, he made sure he was locked in at the plate. He had a great day at the plate, and then we didn't make a play in center field. It was in his glove, and then it's a catchable ball, cost us a run. And Mitchell came back and responded to that. And we left a small village on base tonight, didn't we? What was the number?
10.
Just 10. What was our batting average with runners in scoring position, or what was our?
14.
3 for 14 with runners in scoring position. How many punch in that 3 for 14? You wouldn't be able to figure that out because you don't really keep score. You just keep the book and don't really care about pertinent information. 3 for 14 with earnest competition. How many strikeouts? I'm going to say eight.
We had 10 total for the game.
I bet 8 new with runners in scoring position.
6.
What did you guess?
1,000%.
Murph, do you feel like the last 2 appearances that Trevor is getting a little bit more stable, I guess?
It was ballsy tonight, or gutsy tonight. He's thrown a lot, and he's had a lot on his mind, and he's worked really hard on his own time to get his delivery where he wants it.
To answer Pat Murphy's question there, five strikeouts with runners in scoring position tonight against the Marlins, going 3-for-14. They did draw three walks and a hit batter. I'll give them that. But five punch, not great. Let's wrap up the program after this on 620 WTM. All right, last minute of the program. Remember, if you missed any of it, Brewers All Access, wherever you get your podcasts. Also over on YouTube, ESPN Milwaukee, we have the video up, Brewers Weekly. Broke down Trevor McGill these last couple of outings. Broke down Brandon Sproat in yesterday's game. Talked a little bit about William Contreras. A lot of good in that one. So I'm really happy with the work. We nerd out for a little bit. We'll have some interviews later on in the season. Encourage you to check that out over on YouTube. Works as a podcast, better as a video. Again, ESPN Milwaukee for Brewers Weekly. Tomorrow, 3:10 first pitch. We are on the air at 2. I've got you covered for Brewers warm-up. That'll take us to the bottom of the hour. Then the on-deck show will take over from there. Then Sunday is a 12:40 first pitch, so just the on-deck show coming up this weekend on Sunday. Tomorrow and Sunday's pitching matchups are fantastic. A couple of former opening day starters, Brandon Woodruff and Sandy Alcantara, getting the nod tomorrow at Lone Depot Park. Runs will be at a premium. And then a whole bunch of Flames. It'll be Jacob Mizorowski and Yuri Perez going on Sunday before the Brewers' next off day on Monday, and then they continue their road trip in Detroit, where they take on the Tigers, and I imagine the Brewers are going to be seeing, just confirming, the one, the only, Tarek Skubal there in Detroit, probably in the finale of that series, given I believe he pitched tonight. Nonetheless, the Brewers get the victory today. That is three wins in a row. Everybody in the Central is above 500. How about that? Everybody's playing some pretty darn good baseball for, you know, oh, the division that nobody cares about. April 17th, and it's been pretty fun so far. Thank you so much for listening and dealing with the storms with us tonight. Our thanks to our producer, Matt Yasel, who crushed it as always. I'm Dom Catronio. Until next time, keep on swinging.